We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
On the phone with me for this segment, I have Nancy Altman. She is president of Social Security Works, a national nonprofit organization fighting to protect and expand Social Security, and also the author of the book, The Truth About Social Security. Thank you for joining me today, Nancy. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
Now, first of all, tell us a little bit about your background.
Well, I have been working on the issue of Social Security and private pensions for over 40 years. I'm a lawyer by training. I started out as a tax lawyer, and I was privileged to work for Alan Greenspan when he was head of the so-called Greenspan Commission involving Social Security. I've taught at Harvard. I've worked in Congress, and I'm now fighting to work to protect and also expand Social Security.
Okay, let's get right into it. Tell us about Social Security. What is Social Security? When was it founded and why?
It had its birthday recently, August 14th, 1935, 83 years ago, was when President Roosevelt signed it into law. What it is, some people say, oh, it needs to be modernized, 1935. Actually, it is thoroughly modern. The concept is that as long as we are dependent on wages to pay for food, shelter, clothing, we need insurance against the loss of those wages. You can lose wages because you have a disabling illness or accident and can no longer work. You can lose wages because you die and you've left dependents who are or young children who are depending on those wages. And you can be fortunate to live to old age. And you want to have steady income that you cannot outlive. You can outlive savings, but not Social Security. You can live to 100. You can live to 120, and your Social Security check will come every single month.
Now, why did you decide to write the book, The Truth About Social Security?
The reason is that one of the things that Social Security is intended to provide, not only are those cash benefits, but is peace of mind, security. And that's been lost in recent years because of all the talk, which I call is the subtitle of my book is Zombie Lies and Common Misunderstandings. And some of the misunderstanding, and in fact, it's really, I consider it an effort to undermine confidence in Social Security, is this idea that as the wealthiest nation in the world, at the wealthiest moment in our history, we can no longer afford Social Security. So I wrote this, and you also hear a lot, oh, they never intended this, it's much bigger than they wanted it to be, and so forth. That's all not true. So I went back and read the founders' words, and what I found were that they were extremely visionary. In fact, their vision far exceeds where we are now. They understood that for economic security, you had to have a good-paying job, you had to have insurance against the loss of those wages, which is what we today call Social Security. You have to have education. And they almost enacted, they thought it was right around the corner, was what today we would call Medicare for All, guaranteed health care. So they would recognize today's program, but they'd just be surprised that we hadn't built more on the cornerstone, as President Roosevelt described it, that they laid down in 1935.
Many politicians say Social Security is the monkey on the back of the federal debt. However, you say that Social Security doesn't add a penny to the federal debt. How is that possible?
Because Social Security has dedicated revenue. As you I think probably all of your listeners know, you know, who is this FICA? It's Federal Insurance Contributions Act. It's a withdrawal, it's a deduction from everybody's paycheck matched by their employers, and it is a premium for Social Security. Social Security is very responsibly structured, so it cannot pay a penny of benefits, and it can't even pay the associated administrative costs without having sufficient revenue to cover every penny. So that it has no borrowing authority. So unlike the federal deficit, which has been almost every year since 1960, Social Security has never and cannot increase the debt because it cannot pay benefits if it doesn't have enough revenue.
Well, they say that, with people living longer, they're saying that that's paying out more. Doesn't that add to the debt?
No, because the money comes from Social Security. In fact, there's a wonderful clip of Ronald Reagan on YouTube who says, let's get this straight, Social Security cannot add to the deficit. This, because the money is segregated in a trust, the same way a pension trust, and we all contribute to it, and the money is drawn out for there. So there our population is aging somewhat, but the actuaries, again, because of Social Security's responsible management, Congress has always required, starting back in 1941, when benefits were first paid in 1940, that there's the Board of Trustees, who are in control of Social Security, project out 75 years. That's an extremely long valuation period. But they have about 40 actuaries working for the Social Security Administration who are projecting mortality rates and fertility rates and what wages are going to do and what inflation will do, not just for 5 or 10 years, but over the next 75 years. Now, whenever you project out that far, you may make mistakes, but Congress has plenty of time to correct. So the fact that we are aging, the fact that there was a baby boom, the actuaries knew in 1947 that 1946 was a high birth year. By 1964, they knew there was a baby boom going on. And by 1970, they knew the fertility rate had dropped. So this is not, this idea of an aging population is news to many, but not to the actuaries. And if I can tell you just one funny anecdote, what I find an interesting anecdote from the history on this point, the longest serving actuary was a man I was privileged to know named Robert J. Myers. He started working on Social Security, if you can believe it, in 1934, the year before the Social Security was enacted. He was part of the Roosevelt administration as a young actuary working on the numbers. And I met him in 1983, and was one of the things he was very proud of. He would tell me that in 1934, they made long-range projections, and they projected what the percentage of the population would be over age 65 in year 2000. So they projected that it was 12.7%. You know what it actually was? They were a little bit pessimistic. It was 12.4%. They overestimated just by a bit. So these actuaries know what they're doing, and they actually offer a range, and they give Congress, because of these 75 years, enough time to go in and increase the revenue if that's necessary.
Okay, so you're saying that it doesn't add money to the debt, even though there is an aging population, so the money just keeps coming in, and they keep appropriating the money, so you're saying that it is in good shape?
And in fact, it actually is not even an appropriation. It's mandatory spending, so that the money is in the trust fund. You can think of it comparable to an insurance company that you've got. We all have an insurance policy called Social Security. If we are unfortunate, and what it provides us is life insurance, disability insurance, and retirement annuities. Once we hit an insured event, if we become disabled, if we die prematurely, or if we reach old age, we go in and we basically cash in our policy and say, okay, it's time to start paying me. And so the money comes out of the trust fund. So Congress is not appropriating it. It's just automatic that those payments are made, and that's why the actuaries keep such close watch on it.
Okay, great. Now, what are some of the most common myths about Social Security?
Well, one is is what we were talking about, that Social Security is unaffordable, which is not correct. Social Security, as a percentage of our GDP, will not spend much more at the end of the 21st century than it costs today. Another myth you hear all the time is, oh, yes, I know we've paid in, and there's a reserve, there's an accumulated surplus, but those are just IOUs. They've just been invested in IOUs. You know, I laugh because we heard that a lot from George President George W. Bush during his administration, but the first one to call the investment of the Social Security surplus was Alf Landon in 1936 when he was running against Franklin Roosevelt. The truth is that there's a $2.8 trillion surplus accumulated, held in reserve, in trust for all of us, and they are invested, but Congress wants, because it's the workers' money, to be invested in the safest investment on earth. It's invested in Treasury bonds backed by the full faith and credit of the United States. They have the same legal status as ones that you or I might buy, or other pension funds might buy, or China buys. They are all bonds, or I guess you could call all Treasury bonds IOUs, but it's, again, a way to diminish what is a really very sound program.
So the money in that trust is making money through purchase of bonds.
Exactly.
Very, very good. I never knew that. Now, you also talk about in your book, you talk about the tiny splinter group with oversized influence. Who are you talking about there?
Well, the person who coined that phrase was President Eisenhower. He, in a private letter to his brother in 1954 that then became public, said that people who want to abolish Social Security are a tiny splinter group. Their number is negligible, and they are stupid. Unfortunately, this tiny splinter group that he talked about, who have been were with us in the 1930s and are with us today, have oversized influence because they tend to be extremely wealthy. They're literal billionaires who are who don't like Social Security and, you know, are trying to undermine our confidence in it, so that they have larger influence. And back in the beginning, people would be honest about it, and they'd say, oh, it's socialism, government shouldn't be doing this, people can have too much security, we can't have this. But they kept losing because the American people overwhelmingly appreciate what Social Security provides. So they changed their tune starting in the late 70s and said, we love Social Security, but, you know, we can't afford it. And because of their influence and access, they have they convinced too many of our elected leaders and too many of the mainstream media that it's true. And the reason I wrote this book is to give the facts that it is just not true. Social Security, the question of whether we expand Social Security or we cut Social Security is a matter of values, plain and simple, not affordability.
Okay, you talk about expansion. Can we afford to expand Social Security?
Absolutely. Social Security, first of all, is an extremely efficient program. Less than a penny of every dollar that's spent is spent on administration. More than 99 cents of every dollar is spent on benefits. That's a much higher efficiency rate than you'll find in any private pension program that you could find. In addition, the benefits are quite modest by virtually any standard. In absolute terms, they average about $15,000 a year. In terms of replacing wages for someone earning about $40,000, it replaces only about 40% of their wages, which is not enough to maintain your standard of living. And by international standards, the United States benefits are at the bottom if you look at the OECD countries, the European, other industrialized countries. So the one shortcoming of Social Security is that the benefits are too low. There are about a dozen bills that have been introduced in Congress that expand Social Security and fully pay for it. The main way they pay for it is to require the very wealthiest among us to pay their fair share, which most people think they are not, because there's a cap on how much we pay. So a minimum wage worker pays 6.2% of his or her wages contributes to Social Security, but Bill Gates probably pays like 0.0001% because you only pay up to the first $128,400.
So you're saying that we can expand Social Security without taxing or overtaxing the low and middle income?
We can. I mean, there are various proposals, and this really is politics in the best sense of the word. If the Democrats were to win in November, the chairman of the person who will become chairman of the Social Security Subcommittee of the House Ways and Means Committee is a congressman from Connecticut who has introduced what he calls the 2100 Act, because it expands, it makes sure that all that expands benefits and makes sure they can all be paid through the 21st century. He has already said, and his bill has 172 co-sponsors. If he becomes chairman, he's already said he will hold hearings. He has assured those of us who work in this field closely that they will be transparent, they will be open to the public, and then we can talk about what level of economic security do we want to provide ourselves, and I think overwhelmingly the American people think it should be higher and we should raise benefits, and then how do we fairly pay for it? And it may be the very wealthiest paid them all, and there are proposals that do that. There may be that we spread it even more widely, and everybody, they pay more, but everybody else pays a little bit more as well. Polling shows the American people are so concerned about preserving Social Security that they're willing to do that. But that, to me, is the means to the end. The question is, what level of economic security? And given how wealthy we are as a nation, there's no question we can afford it. But the question is, how do we allocate that cost?
Okay, great. What do you think FDR and the other founders of Social Security think if they could see how the program has developed today?
They would certainly recognize it, but they would be shocked that it hadn't expanded further than it already has. They thought that what we today call Medicare for All, guaranteed universal health care, was right around the corner. They even said it's pious hope but not vain hope. They see it on the horizon. I think they'd be surprised that we didn't have what they called short-term disability. We have long-term permanent disability, but they imagined that we would build on that cornerstone and add paid medical leave, paid parental leave that so many other countries offer.
Now, what do you envision for the future of Social Security? Do you think it needs to be fixed?
No, I think Social Security is a solution. And what I see, and the nice thing, one of the reasons I love working in this field, is that as polarized as the American people are over many issues, we are not polarized over Social Security. If you look at poll after poll after poll, whether it's Republicans or Democrats or Tea Partiers or union members, everybody agrees Social Security is more important than ever. We should expand it. We certainly should not cut it. So what I see is that eventually what I think that expanding Social Security is profoundly wise policy, and it's certainly winning politics. So when you have something that's both wise policy and winning politics, that's often hard to find. I think it's just a matter of time. And as I say, if the Democrats take over the House, they're going to hold hearings. They'll probably force votes. And then Republicans will have to decide. Do they do what their constituents want? Do they offer an alternative? Do they oppose it? And then we as the American people will have the chance in another 2 years to take a vote on that at the ballot box. And in that way, we will, and I believe, if and when that happens, they will vote in people who want to expand and not cut Social Security, and we'll have it happen.
Okay, now where can we get a copy of your book, The Truth About Social Security?
Well, it's in bookstores. It's online at Amazon. For a lot of people don't like Amazon, but it's online at various bookstores online. It's called The Truth About Social Security, and I'm hoping to get it into libraries, because I'm not doing this to make money. I'm doing this because I really want people to feel, to understand what an ingenious and wonderful program we have, how secure it is, and that it will be there for them.
Okay, as we close, is there anything, one specific point you'd like to make about Social Security?
Yes. If people, and I don't want to get too partisan on this, but if people care and are concerned about Social Security, this election is extremely important. So what I hope people will do is vote and really press the people who are running the candidates. Don't let them get away with, we want to save it, we want to fix it. The question is, you promise never to vote to cut this, and will you vote to expand it?
Okay, Nancy Altman, president of Social Security Works, a national nonprofit organization fighting to protect and expand Social Security, and also the author of the book, The Truth About Social Security. Thanks once again for joining me today, Nancy. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.